Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there from Bogota, Colombia. How are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I'm taking a break from my beginner's guide to Bitcoin to look at how Bitcoin is being used around the world. And following my interview in El Salvador, I have an interview with Mauricio Tovar Gutierrez and Alejandro Beltran Torrado in Colombia. I hope I got those pronunciations right. But before that, I do have a message from my show sponsors. First up, I'd like to welcome my new sponsor, CoinTracker, to the podcast. And with tax season upon us, it is time to get your shit together. And this year, I've been using CoinTracker to calculate my taxes, and it couldn't have been easier to link my wallets and exchanges and get my tax calculated in just a few minutes. Their filings work in the US, UK, Canada, and Australia, so you can join the other 100,000 users who use CoinTracker and file your crypto taxes in seconds. It is integrated with TurboTax, Coinbase, Binance, Kraken, and over 300 other exchanges and wallets, more than anyone else. And it is free to use for users who have 200 or fewer transactions in a tax year. And for listeners of the show, you can also get a 10% discount by using the link cointracker.io/a/WBD. It is available on the web, but they do also have an app for the Apple and Android app stores. So if you want to find out more, head over to cointracker.io, which is cointracker.io. Also, I want to welcome my other new sponsor, CipherSafe, to the podcast. If you want a very cool way to back up your private keys, then their newly released Cipher Wheel is really cool. It's one of the best private keys tools I have seen. It is a unique way to store your private keys. Machined from solid stainless steel, and that's not any steel, but 303 stainless. That was following one of Jameson Lopp's famous tests, and this is the coolest Bitcoin C backup device that I have seen. The Cipher Wheel is designed to be physically locked with a padlock and comes with a tamper evident seal, so you can be aware if anyone has made an attempt to steal your seed words. So you bought a hardware wallet, right? So I know you take your Bitcoin security seriously. Now go the extra step and secure it from physical disaster with a Cipher Wheel seed storage device. Find out more, head over to cyphersafe.io, which is CYPHERSAFE.io, to purchase your Cipher Wheel and keep your Bitcoin safe. Okay, so onto the show, and we're taking a break from my beginner's guide to Bitcoin for a few weeks. I'm currently traveling through South and Central America, and while I'm here, I'm talking to people who are using Bitcoin in these countries. But don't worry, I will definitely be continuing the beginner's guide soon. So the use case for Bitcoin, it can vary from country to country. How people use Bitcoin in New York or London will differ from those on the border of Colombia and Venezuela, where speculators may have access to the best hardware wallets and sophisticated security. Those in the developing world may have to share a phone or may have limited data connectivity. So as part of my series covering Bitcoin around the world, I'm going to be visiting the far reaches of our planet to look at how different communities are using Bitcoin and the challenges they face. In this opening interview, I speak to Mauricio and Alejandro, two people part of the Bitcoin community in Bogota, Colombia, and we discuss the politics and economics of Colombia, Bitcoin regulation, and their close ties to Venezuela. I will also be traveling to Venezuela today to look at how Bitcoin is being used there. And if you've got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Good morning, Alejandro. Good morning, Mauricio. Thank you for your hospitality in Colombia. Nice to sit down with you and talk about some Bitcoin.
Thank you for having us, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
Right, so before we kick off and get into things, let's just do a little bit of background on both of you so people know who we're talking to. And so we'll start with you, Mauricio. Just introduce yourself, tell people what you do, tell them a bit about yourself.
Yeah, of course. I've been working in technology for my whole professional life, the past 10 years. And we started a research group in the National University of Colombia 9 years ago to work on ICT technologies, video games, cloud platforms, mobile applications, things like that. And 4 years ago, I learned about Bitcoin, and I went to two meetups. I didn't understand anything about this technology, but I saw software developers talking about Bitcoin and money, and I saw that was something interesting on that. It wasn't my specific area of interest, but I saw something. So I started to learn to think about this and how to apply this in Colombia, and we start with the Vive La Bogota, that it's a an innovation digital lab to work on Bitcoin and blockchain technology.
And you, Alejandro, please introduce yourself. Tell people a bit about yourself.
Well, I came from a traditional banking system because I was a stockbroker about 10 years ago. And then I started to be an entrepreneur and started to explore new technologies. I started with crowdfunding, maybe as an opportunity of a traditional financial system. And then I met these chilling guys from Buda.com. We started the SurBTC. It was a Bitcoin exchange. And well, I started to know about Bitcoin and what the hell is Bitcoin. As a stockbroker, I didn't realize that Bitcoin was real. So I started to study more about this kind of technology and decentralizing system. So then we started. We founded Buda.com in Colombia. And then about 4 years ago, I'm doing this. I'm exploring new technologies. We start the Blockchain Colombia Foundation, that is an NGO that are working for education, development, and communication with public institutions. And then we are here speaking about what connect to us, that is Bitcoin, is real and is the best one.
Well, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you both for agreeing to do this. So one of the things I wanted to do this year, it's like a goal for me with Bitcoin, was based on my experience of last year and going into El Salvador and learning about a Bitcoin project there, I thought it would be very useful to travel around the world, visit different countries and find out how Bitcoin is being used, the different use cases, because sometimes I personally, I'm guilty of thinking of the Bitcoin user experience of one that just suits me. You know, I've got my hardware wallet, I've got my saved my billfold all with my backed up keys hidden in a specific location. And what happened in El Salvador, I met a community of people who were using Bitcoin and it was being used to keep kids off the streets. They would earn Bitcoin and be able to spend it locally. But these people don't have a hardware wallet, is the first thing. They don't have, they live in a house which is essentially a hut, you know, which anyone can break into. There's nowhere to hide a billfold or something. So I realized then there has to be a different consideration for something such as private key management. Mm-hmm. So just that experience alone made me think I wanted to go around the world and visit places. And you know, as you both are aware, I went to Cucuta yesterday. That was a very useful experience. But I think to get a kind of holistic view of how Bitcoin can help people across the world, you've really got to get into the locations and understand the dynamics of the country. You've got to understand the politics. You've got to understand the economy. You've got to understand, you know, what people's lives are like. So the goal really from this episode is to learn a bit more about Colombia. So the starting point is, tell me a bit about Colombia today. Tell me a little bit about Colombia politically and economically, because based on here in Bogota.
Yeah.
I keep saying Bogota, but based in Bogota, it seems to be a thriving, fairly successful city. Mm-hmm. I've heard Medellin is great now. I've heard crime, I'm aware crime has fallen heavily. Yet Colombia has a history which is, you know, for me as somebody from the UK, the main things I'm aware of historically has been the drugs trade and the paramilitary movements and, you know, FARC specifically. So I don't know who wants to go first, but it'd be great to just get an understanding of where Colombia is politically right now and economically.
I can jump in, yep. Right now, Colombia is the Latin American country that have the growth rate, the highest growth rate, mm-hmm. 3% of the GDP.
Okay.
In the political side, we have a right... political party in the government right now.
Is that a center right?
No, or it's more like you mean Republicans maybe?
Okay,
people from the conservatives that is one of the leadership right here in Colombia, the leadership of the political side of the right is the leadership of the government and they have their flag of of the government is about the innovation and all the economy around the technology and the new technologies. It's a very great discussion because on the public institution, it's very different sides, very different thoughts about what's next on technologies, because they have so control. I mean, it's not a capitalist system. It's more like, feudalismo.
Okay.
It's more feudal because you have all the control of the system. So you don't open this kind of opportunities when you see maybe in the US or maybe in Europe, they are opening to new technologies because they know that they are changing. Right here is more conservative, more restrictive. In my experience, yeah, right?
There are some good things. Maybe we have to present both because it's true what Alejandro said. But the president, the actual president, I have to say, it's the president that knows better about new technologies, and he is doing some bets around that. For example, he started a high council of digital transformation for the presidency. They start with the World Economic Forum, a fourth industrial revolution center. And he knows about this because he's worked in the IDB in the past. But on the other hand, there is some restrictions from, for example, the regulator of the financial system in Colombia. They send some letters to the banks saying that they cannot use, buy, sell, or anything with cryptocurrencies, and that is having a lot of consequences in the ecosystem because, for example, the exchanges have some problems to open bank accounts. But also for me, there is a risk for the country because, you know, everybody in the world is doing some research and doing some projects on this, and the banks in Colombia cannot do it. So it's a risk because the competition is not local anymore. The competition is global. So all of these companies like, you know, I don't know, Libra, Facebook, the central bank, the digital currency of China, they're doing things. And in Colombia, we're not doing. So that's a risk for the country. So they're both parties. Like a very good speech of the president, but on the other hand, the regulator have a lot of restrictions.
Okay, so we'll come back to the regulations and the restrictions around the regard of Bitcoin. I just want to get a bit more into what the political status is. So the current president is Ivan Marquez, is that pronounced?
Ivan
Marquez. What is the name of the party he leads?
Centro Democratico. Democratic
Center?
Party, Democratic Party.
Okay.
And Democratic, right?
And they've been in power for 2 years. Previous to his party, was it also a right party?
Yeah, it's more like center party, but I think it's more like right party because
okay. Center right, yeah.
We our governments about 20 years ago, since Álvaro Uribe Vélez from the right party took the government. The government was of right president. So at this moment, we are living a violent situation about social leaders that are killing in the cities, maybe the places that they are working. So we are living a new kind of violence right here in Colombia. It's not the same thing that we live in the 90s and the 80s, that maybe is the drug traffic. It's the same problem, I think. The drug traffic, the drug dealers, and Mexico took the advantage of the peace process right here in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
But then we continue this kind of violence that in the cities we are not living as well.
Okay.
But in the next places that we have in the country, they are living so it's very critical that they know, and the president has the challenge to forbid and maybe stop this situation.
Yeah. So the constitution of Colombia is a single term presidency, right? There's no re-election, but you have for the so you were in a period of conservatism, and that's been successful economically for the country. As we know, especially in South America, there tends to always be a swing from right to left. There, I've noticed that there's tends to be a bigger gap between the rich and the poor in South America than, say, in Europe. And there tends to be a smaller middle class in South America. Is there, are there any social issues at the moment? Is there any wealth inequality here in Colombia that is causing any level of protest, any level of social unrest? Is that happening?
Yeah. Let's say that Colombia have been success in the economic growth, but not in the inequality aspect of the economy. Because, for example, in Colombia, the banks' growth are at 9.5%, something like that, and the GDP grows 3%. So it's not that everybody is growing at 3%. It's that some sectors of the economy are growing more, and the other don't see any of that growth. So that's a very big problem, and maybe because of that, it's not from the past years. Actually, there is a long story on that situation, and maybe for that very long situation, the past year started a protest here in Colombia because the people are very don't want that situation anymore. They want a change. They want to have more opportunities. They want to have access to the education. They want to have a better health system, and the people is waiting for that, and that's a big movement that it starts like 2 months ago, and that it's not finished actually. It's a little stopped, but it's there.
It's there. So yeah, there's like almost if we compare it to my experience in Santiago when I was with Guillermo.
Guillermo.
I'm so terrible at my pronunciations. You know, whilst the trigger in Santiago was the raising of the metro ticket prices, there had been a lot of tension that had been building up for years. Are you saying that there's essentially some tension starting to build?
Yeah, but we are not in because a lot of things that are happening right here in Colombia, because the killing of our social leaders, maybe the access of education as that Mauricio mentioned. We have a lot of inequality. If you see the wealth indicators, we are the second country of inequality in Latin America.
Right.
The first is, I think, is Honduras or El Salvador. So there are many things that we are protesting, and we are annoying. We are
frustrated.
Angry.
By, yeah.
We are frustrated.
Is there much
this.
Corruption?
Yeah.
A lot.
A lot of corruption.
Around 5% of the GDP. The public GDP in Colombia is lost by corruption. It's maybe the most important problem of our country.
Right. Okay. That's a very interesting point. I was in El Salvador on my previous visit to South America. I went up to El Salvador afterwards, and it was explained to me that the new president of El Salvador, his motto for his election was that we have enough money, we just need to stop stealing it from ourselves.
Yeah, and if you ask me, Colombia is a rich country because we have everything. We have a lot of natural resources. We have a lot of young people. We have all weathers in the same country. You can go to the snow in 2 hours and can go to the beach in 2 hours. You have all you need to have a very wealthy country. But unfortunately, the politicians are stealing our future by stealing the money of the public sector.
Right.
So that's an important issue that we have to fight.
And what is the status of education, the health system, and let's say also the social care for the retired? Because they tend to be three of the most important issues that, you know, that people tend to focus on when they're frustrated with social programs.
The education system in the basic education, it's almost at 100% of coverage.
Okay.
It's a good percentage. The quality is another thing, but
but everyone can go to school.
Yeah,
but
almost everyone.
Yeah, about the public education, it's very hard that the people and the kids are accessing to a good education and a public education, but it's more private right here. You don't access, like in Europe, it's happening that you have your high school or maybe your university are paid by the government. It's not the same thing, God, you right here. It's more like a private education too.
Right. So there is a public education system provided by the government, but the quality questionable. The higher education, university, you have to pay yourself. And if you want to go to a very good school, it's private and you have to pay.
Yeah, and in higher education, it's not that easy to access. It's maybe 45 or 50% the percentage of access, not only to the university, also to technical programs and things like that. But we have a very big problem because there is a very big percentage of the people that start the university and leaves the university. So that's...
Why is that happening?
Maybe, I'm not an expert on education. I read something about it, but maybe it's for the quality of basic education. They have a lack of some skills, and the university is very, very hard. So that's maybe one problem. The second can be the economic situation of the students. Sometimes they cannot eat or take a bus or something.
Okay.
That's maybe another situation. And maybe the third one is that in the private universities, it's very, very expensive to access to this kind of education. I don't know if you can add something.
Yeah, no, it's cheaper to have an education, a higher education outside of Colombia than here because it's very expensive. So the cities don't have all the infrastructure to give the education to students. As Mauricio mentioned, the public transport system is not that... they don't have the coverage for many of the locations in Bogota. So it's very hard when you see people trying to get into Transmilenio, that it's our public transport, for free. And then you are annoying because of it. But hey, I don't have opportunities for that. So I need to transport. So I think there are many things to explain what about the quality and the access of education. But I think the most important thing is about the quality. But the Universidad Nacional from Colombia, it is the most important thing, universities in Colombia. They don't have the enough access for people. They don't have the coverage. So I think that's the problem, because it's a very, very good university.
What about the health system? What is the state of the health system? Is there a public health system, or is it entirely private?
That is one of the things that people are frustrated, because the health system, it's very unequal. If you don't pay the health for yourself, you don't access to a hospital. Maybe if you are dying, that is one of the problems, the biggest problems that and the challenge that the government has, because they say that they have the coverage, but they don't have, but people don't have the access. So that is one of the biggest problems that we have here, because they are privatizing the health system. So if you don't have money, you don't have access.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, from my personal experience, that it's a very bad experience, actually, the public health system. Fortunately, I can pay my private health. But I think that maybe, and we come back to the main problem of Colombia, there is a lot of corruption in the system. In the delivery of drugs in the payment between the institutions around health and the hospitals. There is a lot of problems with corruption, and because the investment in budget is very high, mm-hmm. but it's not efficient. So we lost a lot of money in that process. So yeah,
it's yeah. In my experience, comparing to Europe, I was in the hospital waiting for about 8 hours that somebody attends me. In fact, I have a good health plan and I'm paying a good plan in my health system, but I don't have it. Comparing, I was in Spain about 2 years ago and my daughter introduced a corn into her nose. And then we had the problem, we need to go to the hospital. And 30 minutes, we finished. They attended with no documents, with no IDs. They said, hey, it's good. And then we go out. So, hey, good for a Spanish health system. And comparing with Colombia, it's very, very different. It's so different. In fact, with that, people that are paying more a high cost for health is not that different than the people that don't access.
Okay. And how much is health insurance here for high quality private insurance?
The price
for private health.
The price or?
Yeah. Is there a private health system with?
Yeah.
And how expensive is the insurance?
I pay for me and for my mother like $100 per month.
Okay, so I mean that's not. What's the average? Do you know what the average wage is here? Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The average wage. The average is like $800, maybe. The average?
900, yeah.
The minimum is like 20, no, $250,
yeah,
maybe.
Like
right.
The
so
minimum.
A person working in Colombia typically earns around 6.7 million COP per month. What's that translate?
No.
It's more like...
it's 900 and...
$2,000.
Oh, 914,000. Yeah. It's the lowest average. It's kind of a mixed thing here, but that's still a big chunk.
Yeah,
to take out. Okay, yeah. I understand.
Not all the people can pay that. Yeah.
No. Okay. Can you just update me on what the situation also is with FARC and the paramilitaries? Because my understanding was that there was a peace agreement.
Yeah.
There was. But I went up to Cucuta yesterday and. The paramilitaries are running some of the trading routes into Venezuela. So the paramilitaries still exist, but that to me sounds a little bit more like a criminal organization, less so a ideological paramilitary organization. Mm-hmm. What is the situation there right now?
Well, yeah, with FARC, we signed an agreement, a peace agreement, like 3 years ago.
Well, 3 years in 2016.
In 16, yeah, 4 years. And from that point, Colombia started the process to compensate victims, to try to keep the public force, the militaries to the zones that FARC controls in the past. It's not a perfect process, but I think that the past government started a very good effort on that. This one, I have to say, they try to continue, but it's not the same like the past one because they proposed them, the peace agreement, and it's a different party, like kind of opposition, but they're trying to continue the process. But there is some problem because some of the people that were in the guerrilla in the process leave the process.
Okay.
And goes back to the jungle, you know? And is that
because they're frustrated at the process, or do you think it's a loss of identity? They're almost institutionalized as a paramilitary group in the jungle, and they just don't want to leave it.
You know, I only can see what the news show us, because is different behind the scenes, you know? There's a lot of information there that we don't know. But for me, it's more that they're scared that maybe they're scared that maybe the government is not going to respect the agreement,
right?
Something like that. But as I said, it's we don't have the information.
You don't know
behind the scenes. A lot of things happen behind. And we just see the news that 100 people leave the process or things like that. But most of the people that were in the guerrilla are still in the process.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the next area I just want to cover, because this is a good segue to get into Bitcoin, is that when I did an interview with two people when I was in Uruguay, they were from Argentina. And they talked about the history of money in Argentina. I always pronounce this incorrectly. Corralito.
Yes.
And they say because of that, because you know, essentially they had no access to their money and the value of their money was wiped out, there was a very different understanding and opinion of money in Argentina. Therefore, something like Bitcoin becomes is very obvious. It's you know, people just understand it. What is the history of money in Colombia? You know, has there been any periods of hyperinflation which has decimated people's income? You know, what is the history here?
Well, we started the history of money right here in Colombia is the private banks controlling the money in the century about 100 years. They are controlled by the private banks. And then when the countries were starting to control by the central banks with the Keynesian theory, the government controls. And then in the 90s and the 80s, we have a hyperinflation with two digits. It's more like 20 or 30% of inflation. But the central bank right here in Colombia, for the constitution, because of the constitution, they have to control the prices of the economy. In fact, we have control. We are the country that have controlled the prices of the economy. We are in the 3% of inflation comparing to other countries. Well, you see Venezuela is a hyperinflation and comparing. I think the monetary policy of the central bank are doing very well, but they don't have the tools to make more life quality to people. They are more focused on the monetary policy, and then is not the biggest problem that we live right now.
Okay.
But I think the central bank are doing well, are doing its job. So okay. I don't think that maybe there's the unique thing that they have there. They have the control in the international reserves. And well, about the money, I think we are a small country. We don't have this great economy. We are actors in the Latin American contest but in the monetary policy we are still a small country comparing with the US or maybe Mexico or maybe Brazil that are the biggest countries for comparing. They are controlling their system, but they don't have the...
I work in technology. I don't know about a lot about economics, but I can say that when I was a child, the highest money paper that I see in that moment was 500 pesos.
Yeah.
It was the highest. And right now, there is just coin of 500 because the lowest... paper of money that we have is 1,000. So in 30 years, we have that situation. And the volatility of the Colombian peso versus the dollar is very high. 2 years ago, we were like 2,800. And right now, we are 3,400 or something like that.
And the informal economy about the cash, the physical cash, from 9 to 10 people use cash to their transactions, the e-payments that we know, the electronic payments, the debit or credit card, they use by less than 10% of the population. So this is one of the problems about the digital economy that that people say, because hey, you are using cash, and it's really, really easy to use cash for people, and they trust about the cash. And the informal economy it's very weak in Colombia.
Okay, all right. Well, let's get into the Bitcoin side of things then. And obviously,
but I have to say there is a lot of good things in Colombia that maybe we have to explain, because we're focusing also maybe in the biggest problems. But I have to send a message.
Do you know what?
That it's an incredible country to visit.
Yeah, well, no, it is. I mean, firstly, it is beautiful. This is my first time here. If I can say this without sounding disrespectful, the women are beautiful. Yeah, like, yeah. I've traveled through South America, and Latin American women are amazing. Amazing, very strong women. I think my experience is very strong, very proud women. But they're beautiful here.
No, and the people are too kind.
Everyone's so friendly.
We are a good people. We are funny people.
Yeah.
We always... in fact, perhaps we have a lot of problems right here, but the people are going and moving on, and then we have a lot of friends from different cities.
And I have to say that they're not only beautiful, the women here in Colombia, they're so intelligent and good leaders. The people that I most admire in my career are women. For example, the president of the National University of Colombia, it's an amazing woman.
They're a bit fiery.
Far from.
They're fiery. They're a bit passionate.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of a couple of the women I've met out here.
No. But we're Latinos, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the thing. I'd never been to Latin America until Uruguay back in December, and I immediately had to come back. And I want to see all of it. It's an incredible continent with an incredible history. Fascinating, but Colombia is phenomenal. You might not even know the reason I ended up here in Bogota.
Yeah.
Oh, the reason I ended up in Bogota is I have a friend here, and he's an ex-drug addict, and he nearly died, and so I came out to visit him. This is why I've ended up here.
Okay.
And I'm going to be interviewing him later.
Okay.
But he'd been saying for a long time, you've got to visit Colombia. He said Colombia to me. He said Colombia is the best country in Latin America. I mean, I know you're going to say that, sure. But I will say, I think it's incredible. I mean, look at the view we've got. People can't see this. Look at this view. You know, we're in
the
center.
Yeah.
We've got a mountain behind us. It's sunny. It's beautiful. And the coffee.
Yeah.
Down in Cúcuta, I had the best coffee I've had in my life.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't need sugar. I didn't need milk. They made me with a locally grown bean. So you got the best coffee.
Yeah.
You got the best women. You got amazing sunshine. I mean, what else do you need?
And we have a lot of very smart young people. Also,
yeah. You do.
Okay, and a nice weather. We have the same weather the whole year. And we can go to different places, very cold, very hot, in 2 hours.
So you can ski or go to the beach?
No, we don't ski here. We have some ice and things like that, but we don't ski here.
Don't
we have to go to other places. Yeah, okay. It's the only thing.
So that's a fair point, and I'm doing a disservice asking about the problems. Are there any other good things I've not talked about? Are there any other successes in Colombia I haven't asked about that you want to talk about?
For example, there is a lot of entrepreneurship right now. For example, Alejandro, it's the leader, the CEO of Buda, but there is a lot of movement and companies that are starting to grow very heavily in Colombia. For example, we have an example of Rappi, that it's now like a fintech app, but it starts on delivery of food, and they have a lot of services. And they have an investment of some SoftBank from $1 billion. And there is a lot of examples that we can present on that way.
Yeah, I think Colombia has a great a great time to explore that entrepreneurship. And the government and entrepreneurs are realizing that it's one of the things that we maybe we have this bet for grow the community. So in the example of Rappi, that is our biggest unicorn, our first unicorn right here in Colombia. We are so proud of it, but we have a lot of challenge to make this happen, right?
So, but you can build on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of opportunities right here in Colombia because it's everything to build right here. And in the case of technology, we have a lot of opportunities for developers and people that are growing the community, are more curious about how to use the technologies for decentralized many things, and not only in the company, but the social things. They are doing very, very well.
Yeah. Also, the nature in Colombia, it's amazing. And for people that love to visit amazing places, we have a lot of them in the beach, in the coast, and in the jungle. And also we have, for example, the coffee area, that the people is amazing. In Bogota, you have a culture offer amazing, and also a gastronomic offer.
Yeah. Oh,
very good restaurants.
The food here,
yeah,
is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The food, so I've eaten here both nights because it was so good.
Yeah, you find a lot of experience right here in Colombia, because you have beach, you have the mountains, you have cold places, a warm places, a hot places. So you find everything right here in Colombia. So it's very, very good to see that the foreigners and all the tourist people are very, very interesting in Colombia, and see what's happening
and the people fun. Is very happy. You know, you can talk with anyone, and the people is very warm and wants to know you. That it's a good feeling. The Colombian people have a good feelings with foreign people, and between us also. So it's a good place to visit.
How's the football team? How's the national football team doing?
No. I don't want to talk about.
It's not bad.
No. Yeah, the 23 Colombian team. The sub 23, yeah. I don't know what to explain it, but the young people of the national team, no, are doing so bad. We need to focus on improve.
I remember two games where England have played Colombia. I remember once in a World Cup, I think we won 2-0, Beckham scored a free kick. But the game I remember most is, do you remember the game where your goalie did the scorpion
kick? Yeah, Higuita, the goalkeeper.
He's a crazy
man.
It's
an historical moment, right?
Wow, it is. It's one of the most historical moments in football, but kind of a risky thing to do. I mean, if he'd have got it wrong, you know, he would have looked like a fool.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. It's an iconic football moment in football history.
Yeah, I remember the World Cup in France.
Yeah.
The England and Colombia that we lost 2-0 because of David Beckham.
Yeah, it was a great free kick. I mean,
yeah,
it's a
great
Beckham,
free kick. Yeah,
but I hate Mondragon at this time.
Yeah, but that is the Colombian people. It's a risky guy.
Yeah.
And there is a sentence that you use in Colombia, that the risk that you have coming to Colombia is that you want to stay.
Oh, I don't want to go.
That's a big risk.
I say that, you know, because I'm off to Venezuela later today, and I desperately want to go for the food and the experience. And I've got to say, my experience down to Cucutai, and we're going to get into this, and meeting the people from Venezuela, they felt very similar to the Colombians.
Yeah.
They were also very friendly.
Yeah.
They were very hospitable. They wanted to tell their story, and you could tell. We have a term, we say they have a weathered face, like, you know, they've been through a lot.
Yeah.
But again, I, you know, I was told to be careful. I didn't feel unsafe at any point. I felt like this is a group of people who are trying to do the job that the government should be doing for Venezuela. They were coming to earn money and get food and bring things back. Yeah. So I do want to go to Venezuela as well, but I also don't want to leave
Colombia. We are the same with Venezuelan people.
Yeah.
Colombian and Venezuelan people, very similar.
I know a lot of people from Venezuela since the people stay right here in Colombia, so they are very nice people. They are very warm. They are very similar to us, so we share a lot of things. Maybe you tasted the arepa, no? The Venezuelan pepiada?
Oh, yeah. The Reino Pepido? What was it called?
Reina Pepiada.
Yeah. Reina Pepiada. Oh,
that was the cheese, yeah. The cheese.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we have the same. It's not the same thing. It's very similar.
Yeah.
That we have the arepa, but in different
the
toppings and
ways.
The biggest
fight that we have with the Venezuelans is who do the better arepa.
This is one of the challenges.
Wow, I mean, the Venezuelan one I had yesterday was pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I had one in El Salvador as well, but it's called a pupusa or something.
Oh,
pupusa.
Never been there.
Yeah, and that was also very good. Well, we will see. I'm looking forward to that experience. But we should talk a little bit about Bitcoin. And I know specifically, Alejandro, you have working for Buda. You know, Guillermo explained to me the experience they had with the banks, both in Santiago and here in Colombia. And the experience was, was it about 18 months you were?
Yeah, about about a year.
Yeah.
We closed the operation right here in Colombia, trying to clarify with the financial authority.
And I should just let people know. So my interview with Guillermo is not going to be coming out until I think it's going to be towards the end of February. So people should know I did that first. So Buda is the exchange which I covered in Santiago, but we've got to hold that back for a certain reason. So we're doing this one first. But you work for the same exchange. Are you a partner? Did you were you one of the founders?
In Colombia, right? Yeah. Here in Colombia, we have a partnership with Guillermo and all the partners in Chile. So with my partner, we founded right here Buda in Colombia, and we started communicating with people, with public institutions about our operation is forbidden, or they allow us. No, we don't have the blessing about the government. They said, hey, there is no restriction. It's not about us. We don't have the situation. But with in 2017, that when Bitcoin grows up a lot, they paid attention about what was happening, and they communicate with a document that the financial institutions are not allowed to use cryptocurrencies or develop cryptocurrency services right here in Colombia. So the banks understood that it includes all the crypto services, that it's not a financial institution. So they close our account, and then we need to clarify it about with legal actions. We sue the financial authority, and then they started to conversations with them, and then we finally open at the middle in the last year.
So what is the current state? Bitcoin is now legal to trade, mine, spend?
Yeah, Bitcoin is not regulated.
Okay.
It's not an illegal thing because you don't have the regulation, but it's not forbidden.
Oh, so it's okay, so there's no regulations around it.
Yeah, there are no regulations.
Okay.
So
taxed?
It's legal. We don't have a policy or a public policy that forbid that, but the banks are very conservative in the moment that you open a banking account, because we've been living for many criminal activities, and they think that there is a relationship between Bitcoin and these kind of criminal activities. In fact, the Ponzi schemes right here in Colombia are very useful to rob to people. We have
a digger now. Well, we'll cope.
We are building.
But actually, we are working with financial institutions trying to educate people to see that Bitcoin is not the bad thing. The humans are the bad thing. So I guess Bitcoin, they are working. In fact, one of the biggest banks in Colombia are working with the blockchain of Bitcoin, doing some experimental things.
Okay.
So, yeah. We are in the same side. We are on the dark side, but many people
for
are
the regular
us.
People, they can use it. For the citizens, they have no problem to use it. It's only for the financial system. There is some, it's not a specific restriction. It's a letter that the regulators send to the banks saying that they recommend not to use any of these crypto assets. Okay. or something that. But it have some consequences in the sector, because if the bank says that a public institution is saying that, a regulator, so the other public institutions say, I cannot say it's something different than the regulator. So it's more than for the financial sector in the practice, but there is no law that say you cannot use it or something.
Yeah,
like that.
The Congress are working on a project law to try to promote the regulation on exchanges or cryptocurrency operators right here in Colombia. But it's only the beginning of the regulation.
Actually, the congressman that promotes that project of law, that is, his name is Mauricio Toro.
Good name.
Yeah, it's a good name. Very, very similar to mine. And it's a very young congressman. And he opened the possibility to the people that wants to vote for him in the campaign to give him a Bitcoin.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Finance
with Bitcoin.
We work with them in the campaign. So it works a little bit, but they show that work that Bitcoin works for that. So
interesting.
He sent that
we're
message.
Trying to reply the experience of a congressman in the U.S. that they finance their campaign with Bitcoin. So
is Bitcoin taxed here?
No, there are documents, pronouncement about the what it's the tax.
Getting nearer, isn't it?
Yeah. In fact, we are in the street, they are working on.
Yeah. Well, we'll cope. We'll cope. People have to put up with a bit of digging in the background.
But about the tax situation, we don't have the announcement of the tax authority right here. They say that you need to be careful when you start buying, and then you tax it. But there are a lot of things to tax the Bitcoins for.
Oh, okay.
We don't have this one thing that maybe say, hey, you need to tax Bitcoin like this.
Next up, I talked to Mauricio and Alejandro more about Bitcoin in Colombia and also what's happening in Venezuela. But before that, I got a message from my amazing sponsors. So first up, it's the Mighty Kraken. Yes, the best place to buy, sell and trade Bitcoin. I'm always telling you this, but why are they the best? Well, they've consistently been rated the best and most secure cryptocurrency exchange. So whatever level your experience, Kraken has designed and built a streamlined Bitcoin exchange for newcomers and Bitcoiners alike. Their platform provides world-class financial stability by maintaining full reserves, healthy banking relationships, and the highest levels of legal compliance. They pair their global 24/7 365 live chat with an extensive support center to help ensure your questions are answered and your needs are met around the clock, no matter who you are or where you are. They offer an exclusive and additional layer of near real-time, hyper-personalized support through their Kraken account management program. And with Kraken Pro, a beautiful mobile-first app, you can trade Bitcoin wherever you want. There is no better place to trade Bitcoin. So find out more, head over to kraken.com or download the app, which is available for the iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is K-R-A-K-E-N-P-R-O. And next up, we have the amazing BlockFi, the future of Bitcoin and financial services. I was hanging out with Zach. I met up with him in Mexico, found out about everything that's coming. It's going to be a really big year for BlockFi. So many announcements coming. I cannot wait to tell you about some of these. But they've already made some, you know. They announced their BTC Rewards credit card. Cannot wait to get that. Cannot wait to get sats back on my purchases. And they've also got a mobile app coming. This is on top of their already very successful crypto-backed loans and their interest accounts for your Bitcoin, Ether, or GUSD. Yes, it's going to be a massive year. Cannot wait to work with them. Cannot wait to tell you about everything that's coming. But if you are interested in finding out more about BlockFi, do your own research, then head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. What has adoption been like for Bitcoin here in Colombia? You know, is there widespread adoption, or is it still early? Like, how are you doing?
It's not easy to know, but if you see the statistics in local Bitcoin, yeah. Colombia normally is the sixth or seventh country in the world with most volume in trading in local Bitcoins. Maybe the reason can be, first of all, because we are very close to Venezuela. Venezuela is normally the second country with biggest volume in local Bitcoins. And most of the Venezuelans that are living Venezuela comes to Colombia. And when they're here and have some job and they want to send some money, they use Bitcoin. They use another alternatives also, but they also use a lot of Bitcoin. The second that I can say that people is trying to find options, because the financial sector in Colombia is not a good experience like in the States or in Europe, that you have a very good experience with the financial sector. In Colombia, it's not a good one, and I think that the people is trying to find options on that. And the third one maybe is that, and I have to say that maybe there is some movement between people, between cross-border payments, but also some of them is from money laundering and things like that.
Yeah, I think one of the statistics that we have in Buda is more like an speculation and more like an investment options that we have, an alternative options for traditional stock markets. So it's one of the main thing that people invest in Bitcoin. One thing additionally is, as Mauricio mentioned, about the cross-border payment between Venezuela, because they have a lot of restriction in the currency exchanges. So it's one of the biggest thing. That's why, because Venezuela and Colombia has the most volume, trading volume in local Bitcoins. In fact, when you check the wallets and other things, you see more volume is not only the local thing, local Bitcoins shows. So,
well, we'll talk about that, because that's going to be my next destination. So just before we do that, just a final question on kind of Bitcoin here in Colombia. Are there any unique challenges that you are having here with regards to Bitcoin that anyone should be aware of, or are your challenges with Bitcoin universal?
Well, I think that one of the challenge to get this kind of adoption of Bitcoin, it's more like a culture thing. We are living most of the biggest fraud about the criminal activities, so people think that Bitcoin are promoting that it's very, very wrong thoughts about what we're doing. But
it specifically, is Bitcoin here tied to the drug trade at all?
Well, the financial authorities said that Bitcoin are using for that, but people are afraid because the financial authorities said.
Right.
And when you see the financial authorities saying, hey, no, just be careful with Bitcoin because they are using for criminal organizations to deal with drugs. And
is that generic, or are they talking specifically about the cartels using Bitcoin?
I don't know if the cartel are using it, because if you see the digital traceability that Bitcoin has, I prefer to get my submarines and using the physical cash to
use it.
I don't think that are using it. Okay. But maybe when you see the a lot of phishing and hacking and the ransomwares and all the stuff in the digital technology you see, the organizations, the police and all the international organizations are saying, hey, just be careful with Bitcoin because they are paying the rescue of information on Bitcoins and all the stuff. But it's more about the wrong thing that the financial authority and a few public institutions are thinking about Bitcoin and the technology, because they said, hey, blockchain, yes, but Bitcoin, no. I don't like Bitcoin.
That whole bullshit saying.
So I think it's a wrong way to treat the technology, because Bitcoin is it's a technology it doesn't consider that. So I think it's more like about the culture that we have, the relationship between the money and the criminal things. So the money, when you use the pesos colombianos and the dollar, you say the same thing, but Bitcoin is one of them. So
yeah, and I think if you spend 3 months using Bitcoin, you can see that it's not a good idea to do that kind of things with Bitcoin, because they can the traceability of Bitcoin, and if you send Bitcoin of those guys send Bitcoin to 3 person and those goes to exchanges and they use their ID, they can know who you are with artificial intelligence or something like that. So it's not a good idea. And if you know a little bit about the technical part, you can see that. But it's most like that it's a narrative that they want to send to the public, that Bitcoin is just for this and for dark web and money laundering and things like that. But I think that one big challenge that we have here, and it's different from other countries, is that I don't know if it's for our history with drugs and things like that, but we have a lot of Ponzi schemes here. It's like a cancer. I don't know.
But yeah, you create a Ponzi scheme with mandalas and hawks. One of the Ponzi schemes that restrict the financial authority was with hawks and mandalas.
Yeah.
So you see that it's ridiculous how people convince other people to invest in that kind
and
of.
Unfortunately, they're using the name of Bitcoin for that. In the past, they used that kind of things, but right now they're using, and in the past year they're using the Bitcoin name. And maybe I can understand the authorities on that part, because you know a lot of people lose her money and their money, and they goes to the regulator and say, okay, I want my money back.
Right.
Where is your money? No, in Bitcoin. But that is a and where is your Bitcoin? No, in this company and things. But that is a Ponzi scheme.
Okay.
You know, that is very tough for.
But I think we are showing that we can be self-regulated, and we are trying to show the government and the public institutions that our self-regulation it's good for people, but maybe we build that thing that trust with people. We have 4 years, and we are in 4 years in the market, and we are trying to get that trust with people and the financial institution. But, well, there are many thoughts about...
So your main job here really, well, one of your primary jobs here is, well, there's two, there's education.
Yeah.
But you also have to do a bit of a PR job, a public relations job for Bitcoin because of the misinformation.
Yeah, and my experience when we try to educate people, and we have a lot of events in the year trying to promote responsible use of the technology, many people said, hey, why do you speak a lot about Bitcoin? And hey, we are focused on blockchain. Hey, you need to understand Bitcoin to use the technology. It's the first step And it's the real case that we're using with in real life in the world. So you need to understand Bitcoin before to know the blockchain technology. So it's one of the biggest challenges that we have for people that create this kind of central things about the regulation, about what the financial system works. So I'd say, first you need to learn more about Bitcoin and then you can use the technology as you want. But first you need to learn.
And from the technology perspective and in the market perspective, it's important because if you say Bitcoin, no, blockchain, yes. And then when you have another use case that decentralized some other authority or company, they're going to say no. So it starts with Bitcoin, no, blockchain, yes. But when you have another alternative or another option, they will say again, no. So it's very important to open the market in this time, thinking about the future. And maybe that is why it's very important this project of the congressman, because people is going to the black markets, you know, to because they want they want Bitcoin, they want crypto, and they're going to places that are not regulated. And with this law, the exchanges have to accomplish some requirements that protects the users to buy in a safe places. So that's why it's very important for the ecosystem.
The president of FinTech Technology Association right here in Colombia said that it's more about what we grew up thinking, that regulation is the safest thing to promote a technology or maybe an idea. So we grew up with the Spanish culture about the regulation is great, is not the it's different between other countries when you say that the regulation is very restrictive and they don't have open the technology because the law is lower than technology. So in Colombia, we think that if it's not regulated, it's bad. Is one of the things that we are maybe thinking. In fact, we have the case of Uber, that goes out Colombia because they don't have the regulation and they have the conditions to establish right here in Colombia in a judge decision that makes you are forbid right here in Colombia. It's one of the problems that we have. Okay. It's not regulated. It's bad. That's one of the thoughts.
By the way, people. Bitcoin just went over 10K while we were doing this interview.
Oh, really?
You know, it tipped on. Yeah, that's good. So one of the things I can't end this interview without talking about is Venezuela. I think people in the, let's say broadly crypto, not just Bitcoin, have a habit of looking at Venezuela as a great use case for Bitcoin. And I know people who have worked on looking a bit closer on what the reality is. So Alejandro Machado, you know.
Machado.
Yeah. I've got every pronunciation wrong in this interview. Alejandro, I've been calling him Machado since my first interview over a year ago. Machado. Alejandro was my introduction to Venezuela, my first interview over a year ago, and I've done a couple more. And I noticed there's been some closer studies. There are other projects that are, like Dash is often talking about in Venezuela. But I wanted to really understand the reality and kind of cut through the bullshit. And I think there is a lot of bullshit. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and I went to Cucuta yesterday, the border crossing to Venezuela. An incredible experience for a number of reasons, which I will cover in future. But just as a starting point, Mauricio, because I think we should just try and allow people to understand how desperate the situation is inside Venezuela, yeah, and then what exactly is happening on the border. And also add into that, most of the other borders have all been closed. This one remains open. Mm-hmm. Colombia has been very welcoming, yeah, and very supportive, yeah, of the people of Venezuela. Essentially have become a lifeline. Yeah. And I understand there is a history there in that when there was a time when there were Colombians going into Venezuela because Venezuela was the richest country and, you know, Colombia had its own problems. So there is like this brotherhood relationship between the two countries. But can you just explain to people, you know, what is really going on in Venezuela and then talk about what's happening on the border?
Yeah, the history is that the economic in Venezuela 20 or 30 years ago was so good, and in Colombia, not that good. So a lot of Colombians went there. I think that almost 30 million of Colombian people went to Venezuela. That's why we have a very strong relationship between the two countries. We are very near also, but that's one of the reasons. And a lot of those Colombians are still there.
Right.
A lot of them. Some of them come back, yeah. And I agree that it's a lot of hype regarding what is happening about Bitcoin and crypto in Venezuela. They are using a lot. They are using for storing value, store of value to solve the problem of hyperinflation. But they're also using a lot of US dollars.
Yeah.
Actually, in Caracas, it's more use the US dollar than Bitcoin right now. It's a dollar economy right now, what Alejandro mm-hmm. explained us because he was there very recently. And there is a lot of another projects of cryptocurrencies that say, no, Venezuela is the place, Venezuela is happening a lot. But for example, the past week, we want to know about projects there in Venezuela, developers that are working in Venezuela in Bitcoin and blockchain. It was very difficult to find people working very, very heavily. In the other hand, I heard about histories of friends of mine that have companies and that hire developers in Venezuela. And they have a problem because they pay with Bitcoin to the developers. They have the enough money to leave the country and they leave. So the people that are accumulating Bitcoin are leaving Venezuela. Maybe the people that are saving Bitcoin are leaving Venezuela. So maybe that's another reason why there is no a full trade of Bitcoin in Venezuela, because when you have enough money, you can go out of Venezuela.
You can escape.
Yeah, you can escape.
And I know there are people there because I've spoken to them and I'm going to be meeting some of them. My experience yesterday, I went with two goals. I obviously have a Bitcoin podcast and I want to find out what's happening there and the truth is. I don't know if you know, I also have another podcast called Defiance, which is more about activism and political issues and things. So I also just had a general human interest in what's really happening for the people there. My kind of perspective is that people don't, it's not that people want Bitcoin. People want food, medicine, and basic amenities.
Yeah, it's not about the need. It's not about the opportunity. It's all about the needs that Venezuela people need right now.
And they're very basic needs.
Yeah, it's very basically. When you see about 30 years ago, Venezuela was the most powerful country in Latin America because of the oil, petroleum, and all the stuff. But when you see people right now trying to get the opportunity, you don't see the opportunity on the technology because you see, hey, Bitcoin is revolutionary, hey, I want to invest. No, they have some needs that you provided. And one of the cases that are working in the observatories and all the centers that are investigating the Venezuelan situation, they say that Bitcoin works for this kind of refugees right here in Colombia and other countries in Latin America, that they are sending money to their families. Bitcoin is the greatest discovery in the country. So when you see the kind of situation that you lost money, you print the money and you use it for origami and other things, you say, hey, there is a lot of problems that maybe Bitcoin help people. So,
well, so I saw a lot yesterday in Cúcuta, but strangely, the thing that caught my eye the most and stuck with me because I'd heard about this, was one lady, she had a giant bag of toilet rolls, toilet paper, carrying back. Because I'd heard, you know, access to even to the basics such as toilet paper is very difficult. But, I mean, and I saw all different kinds of things people take back, food and, you know, cigarettes and medicine, everything. But that one stood out to me because that's quite a journey to go just to, you know, we just go to a local store, right? But she's having to cross the border to go across to buy this. And so I think what people need to understand is that there are these absolute basic needs. The economy has essentially died in significant parts of Venezuela. I know it's building up again in Caracas and, you know, Maduro started to change his policies to build the economy up, and I know that's happening, but there are these absolute basic needs people have. There are also people who can't work, or there is no work, or there are also people who are just hungry, very hungry. And I'll tell part of a story of somebody I met. I won't tell all of it, but I went to one of the NGOs to interview the director, and I mentioned this to you, but there was a young man in there with his wife and their baby, and the baby was less than a year old. He'd left his three children in Venezuela, and he'd come to try and get a job to earn money to send food back to his parents and his children. And he himself, his wife, and his child hadn't been able to find a job, and they'd been living on the street for a week, you know, no cover. And they were explaining to me that every night they're having to even hold everything tight because people might even try and steal their clothes. So he said he was almost sleeping with one eye open. What was really powerful, and one of the things really powerful about his experience, what he was explaining, and a lot of people, is that these people aren't just coming into Cucuta to earn money to feed themselves. That actually, everyone's trying to also earn money to send things back. Like, the economy in Cucuta is actually providing resources back into these border towns. Is that a fair observation?
Well, I think it's a fair observation. I think it's a fair observation about what was happening in the border. But when you see that there are many things that are happening inside Colombia, at center in Colombia, and not only the border, that are happening at the same thing. It's not only about the border. When you see cities like Bucaramanga, Bogota, and cities close to there, you see that many people earn money and trying to send money to their families, and they have all the difficulties that poor people has, and we don't have as a Colombian. We don't have all the conditions to attend all the people that are migrating to Venezuela. It's a sad thing because we want to help people, but there's a lot of people migrating to Colombia. So
it's millions. We're talking in millions.
Millions. Yeah. We spoke about 1 or 2 million people. 2 million Venezuelan people
in Colombia, but in the Colombia. Rest of the world, 4 million.
Yeah, four yeah. million.
Yeah,
you it's see, 10% in Chile, of the population in Venezuela, 10% of the population.
I don't know if you when you stayed in Chile. In Chile is about 500,000 people living in Chile. They migrate across the continent, and it's very, very sad to see that.
Yeah, so, and interestingly, on my flight on the way over, I was chatting to a lady from Colombia, and she said, look, we want to help the people of Venezuela, but there's been so many, and what's happening is they're taking the jobs, and they're willing to work for half the price, and that's a lot of money. You know, someone can come and work and even earn, like, $200, but that's a lot of money in Venezuela. Just taking it full circle back to the Bitcoin thing, because the thing people want to understand is that the real use case, which again is limited, but it is what is explained to me, is that a lot of people in Venezuela can't get bank accounts. They don't have the ID or they don't have the money. So it has become a way of just people coming into Colombia earning money. They're buying the Bitcoin. They're using it for remittance to send money back to their family, who then sell it that side to be able to buy food and things. That's the real use case.
Yeah, and I think that Bitcoin is very powerful on that, because so many countries want to send, for example, help to the Venezuelan people, and Maduro can stop that help. But with Bitcoin, he cannot do anything.
Yeah.
It's a real way to help. Bitcoin is a, if the other governments want to help the Venezuelan people, they will try to open the opportunity to Bitcoin, because mm-hmm. Maduro cannot do anything. But there is a problem, is that not all of the Venezuelan people have smartphones. They're sharing their smartphones.
I noticed that. Yeah. Or they don't have data.
Yeah. And not only for financial things, also, for example, for message or WhatsApp, they're sharing between neighbors the smartphones, because not all of them have access to this technology, because it's very expensive for them. They prefer to have money to eat or the basic things than for a smartphone, but normally they have a friend that help them to use or send some message or use Bitcoin or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's the magic of Bitcoin. When you have in trouble with your country and all the things that are happening in the emerging markets in Africa, in South America, and Latin America, you see that Bitcoin works, because it's very, very helpful for people when you transfer money as easy as an email, when you send an email. So I think it's one of the real use cases, what's happening in between Venezuela and Colombia.
But these are these different, this is why it's useful doing this, traveling around the world and meeting people and understanding the different local challenges, because like I said, the use case of Bitcoin for somebody who's living in New York or London is very different from somebody in Cucuta, right? As you said, it's they true. Might not have a phone. If they've got a phone, they might not have data, you know. So is there a requirement for mesh networks? If the people are using Bitcoin, they probably don't give too much of a fuck about long-term savings and stuff. They just want to get some Bitcoin. They want to be able to send it to their family home, and their family want to be able to send it, sell it, and they want to be able to buy food. It's really Bitcoin. So I would say for me, Bitcoin is a speculative tool on the future growth. For these people, it's a tool of survival. It's a genuine tool of survival outside of, let's say, the more wealthy Venezuelans who are like developers and coders who, you know, can earn. When we're talking about the border town, we're talking about Bitcoin as a tool of survival. Therefore, what are the things that need to be built? What is the infrastructure that's needed that can help these people with these absolute basic needs of getting money from point A to point B? How do they get it? How do they transfer it? How do they sell it? And that's a very different experience, like I say, from, you know, successful Western nations, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe in Argentina they are using Bitcoin as a store of value, because they are not so bad like in Venezuela, but they have this hyperinflation problem also.
And a massive distrust of the banks and the government.
I know that because my brother lives there from the past 13 years, and he's living all of these cycles of the economy in Argentina. And it's very painful every time the Argentinian pesos goes down like 35% in 20 hours or something. It's very painful for not only for him, it also for the relatives here in Colombia and other countries. And I think the Argentinian people are very strong on that, because they have a very big history, and maybe that's why the Bitcoin and crypto companies in Argentina are very strong, because they find this option very earlier than us, because we don't have the need, or we didn't have that need 8 years ago as they have it, and they are building on that. Mm. So I think that in Argentina it's more for a store of value than for basic things or living. But in Venezuela, I agree with you that it's more for the day-to-day living thing, yeah.
And if people, I think one of the things I've noticed, if people want to help, there are NGOs operating in Kolkata, yeah. They're providing education, you know, they're providing meals. Yeah. They provide, when I say education, they're providing education to the children who aren't in school right now. So they're providing that, but they're also providing Bitcoin education. The best thing you can do is just make some kind of donation. And interestingly, $100 of Bitcoin in Kolkata goes a long way. Mm-hmm. It goes a very long way. I mean, you were saying to me, I mean, I mentioned I gave a bit of money to somebody. A small amount of money can go a long way in Venezuela. Like, just so people get some perspective, let's say $20. How much money is $20 to somebody living in Venezuela?
$20 in Venezuelan money, it's a lot. It's maybe enough to live 1 month, I think.
For a family?
Entire family lives with $20 in Venezuela. That's why the problem of hyperinflation and the lost cost of money, yeah, produced on this kind of decisions that Venezuela does. So, and in fact, when you see $20 right here in Colombia is not enough money to buy something on to live 1 month. And in a day, you spend that money. When you see Venezuela, you can live for 3 months or 4 months. The stamps. So I think when you see that difference between the value, the money value in different countries, you see that Venezuela is in very, very good, very traveled right here. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to going. I go later today. Hopefully, I'll get through immigration without any problems. It'll be an interesting experience. I want to find out the reality of, you know, what life is like there. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. But, hey, listen, we've done an hour and 25 minutes. Usually I want an hour. What a fascinating interview. Great to meet you both. Consider you friends now. I hope to come back. I really have enjoyed my time here. I thank you for your hospitality. If I can ever do anything for you guys, you know, you just reach out, you let me know. But do you want to just, if people want to, you know, get in touch with you, we want to speak to you, do you want to tell them how they can get hold of you? I'll let you go first this time, Alejandro, because Mauro, you went first last time.
No, thank you Peter for having us. It was a great time to see that in Colombia Bitcoin is happening, and it's very, very great to have you here and check what's happening, and well, good luck in Venezuela, because there will be a very, very interesting experience. So if people want to communicate, I'm from Buda.com. So my Twitter is Abeltran83.
Okay, I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah. And well, no, my email, Alejandro @buda.com. So, well, no, thank you Mauro for inviting me too as well. So thank you.
And Mauro,
thank you very much for visiting us. This is your home, and for all your listeners,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, Colombia is a great place to visit, so we're very happy to have you here, and thank you for sharing with all your listeners what you saw in Venezuela, what you saw here in Colombia. It's very important to people to know the real things that are happening. And my Twitter account is Maurotov, and I'm on LinkedIn. And if you love pictures, I have not crypto pictures, is landscape and things like that. I have an Instagram account that it's also Mauratov. It's just for pictures. And yeah, and we also have an account of Blockchain Colombia in Twitter. You can find us in Facebook and everything. We have a meetup with more than 2,000 of people there. And if you come to Colombia, you can contact us, and we are very happy to talk and build.
Yeah, please let us know when you come back to Colombia and invite you some beers and,
well, I look forward to it. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, all the best. Thank you again. And, yeah, I hope people Hope people listen to this, and I hope they come and visit Colombia, because it is a beautiful country, amazing people. And yeah, all the best, guys.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.
All right, what did you make of that? Pretty interesting, right? So in South America, countries like Argentina and Venezuela seem to get most of the attention from Bitcoiners. And you know, it's understandable. With issues around hyperinflation and currency controls, there is an obvious use case for Bitcoin. But you don't hear so much about Colombia or some of the other South American countries. So it's really interesting to get an idea of how Bitcoin is being used here and the community in Colombia. I mean, I was mainly here to understand what is happening on the Venezuelan and Colombian border. We hear so much about Venezuela. But it was also great to hear more about the Colombian issue specifically. And I've got more shows coming up about this. I've also recorded one in Chile. So keep an eye on this. There's going to be loads of shows about Bitcoin around the world this year. And as ever, if you've got any questions, you can reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Also, if you want to support the show, if you like what I do, if you want to help out, there's so many things that you can do to support the show, whether it's leaving a review or just becoming a sponsor, you know, or share it with your friends. It doesn't matter what you do, it all helps. It's all up on my website. Just head over to whatbitcoindid.com and click on the support section. And yeah, I'm off to Venezuela today. It's going to be a pretty interesting trip. Kind of excited, also a little bit nervous. But yeah, hopefully I'll have some nice reports of what's going on with Bitcoin there soon enough. Anyway, if you've got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.